The Ticket.
Michigan Insider Podcast is brought to you in part by defense attorney and WTKA legal insider Joe Simon. Find Joe at themichigandefenders.com.
And we're back. Welcome to the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub, and the countdown to the start of the Michigan football season. Another day closer to toe meeting leather. And we bring that in style by talking about all the players that adorn the uniform on the number of days away from the season that we are. And today's number is, Mr. Weintraub?
Sam, the countdown of the Michigan football season is brought to you by our friends at Lewis Jewelers, your diamond store and your watch store, proud partner of Michigan Athletics and Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket. And we are now 86 days away. We have one current member of the roster that wears the number 86. So we'll get to that in a moment. But first, I have a couple of former number 86, that wore the number 86 as we get to 86 days left until the start of the Michigan football season, 86 days until September 4th, when the Wolverines host Western Michigan at the Big House. We are 86 Bullet Bob Westfall days away. Bob Westfall was born in Hamtramck. He lived in Ann Arbor. He was a fullback for the Wolverines, about 5'8", about 180 or so pounds, or was he 5'6", about 170? Because, well, we'll get to that in a moment. But his family abandoned by their father when Bob was 2. He lived in foster homes with his older sister until their mom moved them to Ann Arbor in 1924. She worked 14-hour days in a laundry, 6 days per week. Bob also worked, as did his sister. He was a golf caddy, amongst other things, to help make the family make their ends meet. They lived in an apartment on Green Street in the shadows of Michigan Stadium. He went to Tappan Junior High School, where he was the eighth grade class president. He went to Ann Arbor High School, where he was class president from 9th through 12th grades. He was also an athletic standout, where he lettered in football, basketball, baseball, on track and field at Ann Arbor High School. He was the first Ann Arbor High grad to play at Michigan since John Maltbetch in 1916. So he went from 1916 all the way to 1939 before getting an Ann Arbor High School product for the maize and blue. Severe bronchial asthma affected him from the age of 9 through his entire life. And that was an obstacle and another obstacle to overcome, if you think about it. So Ted Kennedy, who played center in front of Westfall for the 4 years that he was here, 1938 through 1941, they were at Michigan together. And he recalled Westfall, quote, had asthma attacks so bad he could hardly breathe, but that he was a very courageous player. I remember, said Kennedy, one night before a big Minnesota game, it was for the national championship, Bob had an attack and they wouldn't let him into the health services. We didn't have the right cards or something like that. He had to crawl home on his hands and knees that night, but he played the next day. And that was from a 1980 Michigan Daily article. In 1940, he played in the same backfield with Tom Harmon and Forrest Evashevsky. In a mid-1940 Associated Press feature on Bullet Bob Westfall, it noted, quote, football fans in record numbers are paying their way to see Michigan's Tom Harmon playing this season, but many of them are coming out from games to question, who's that guy Westfall? Outside the focus of the publicity spotlight, Bullet Bob Westfall, a stocky 180-pound fullback, has matched All-America Tommy almost yard for yard by rushing this fall, and at least 3 games has stolen the show from his illustrious teammate. End quote. We also know Tom Harmon went on to win the Heisman that year. In 1941, Bullet Bob Westfall was a first-team All-American. One of the All-America selectors that year, Harry Grayson, explained the selection of Westfall, quote, Westfall is one of the slickest spinners the game has ever known. Fritz Kreisler built the Michigan attack around Westfall, a fullback built close to the ground. Bob's 186 pounds is spurred over no more than 5'8". He averaged more than 4 yards per whack against the hardest kind of opposition. He fumbled only once in 3 years. And then in the Minnesota game this year, when he was bumped by a young wingback coming too shallow on a reverse, a bruising fullback, Westfall also skirted the ends, was a superlative blocker and a stout defender. And Sam, I read that quote mainly because I want you in one of your next articles about like a recruit or somebody, I want you to get slickest. I want you to get, where are the words in there? Bruising. I want you to use the word skirted and superlative blocker all in the same paragraph because we've come, language has changed and graduated. It's altered a little bit, but that was some great writing from back in 1941. And again, because of his health, think about that. He had that major asthma issue. He was actually ruled ineligible for service for the military. But after World War II, eventually the Army accepted him despite his 4F rating. He was flying planes but was reassigned as a radio operator due to some in-flight issues. In 1942, Bullet Bob Westfall was a first-round pick, fifth overall by the Detroit Lions, where he played from 1944 to 1947. Also in 1944, he returned to Michigan to get his degree and work at the B-24 plant at Willow Run. In 1945, he was first-team All-Pro. He retired in 1947 and became a businessman in Adrian. He was a secretary treasurer for the Adrian Salvage Company from 1948 to 1953 and later served for 27 years as president of Adrian Steel Company. He passed away in 1980. He was a 1987 enshrinee in the College Football Hall of Fame. We are 86 Bullet Bob Westfall days away until the start of the Michigan football season. And we are also, Sam, 86 John Anderson days away. John Anderson was from Waukesha, Wisconsin, Waukesha South High School. He was an offense, an outside linebacker and a defensive end for the Maize and Blue, about 6'3", 210 or so pounds, from 1974 to 1977. And I mainly bring this up, Sam, because he is a standout Green Bay Packer, and I like to bring up standout Green Bay Packers for you here on the show. He was the and this also brings up a name you'll recognize. He was the second of two first-round picks by the Packers in 1978. The first was a guy, Sam, by the name of James Lofton. As a blast of the past.
Yeah, one of the, you know what, by the time we saw James Lofton, he still had some long speed left in the tank, but apparently he did. And he played for the Packers at one point?
Yeah, he was a big-time Packer, but yeah, he went on to play for the Bills.
Yeah, that's why I remember him, the Bills.
Absolutely. When John Anderson retired after 12 seasons, he was the Green Bay Packers' all-time leading tackler with over 1,000 tackles, tied for the career lead in interceptions. For linebackers, the guy by the name of Ray Nitschke. John Anderson was named to the NFL's All-Decade Team of the 1980s as chosen by the voters of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he was inducted into one of Sam's favorite places to visit, the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame, in 1996. By the way, Charles Woodson's in that. So is Kramer, who we talked about yesterday. So a few Michigan guys in there. Post-NFL NFL career, he was a sportscaster in Milwaukee and middle school, where he was an earth science teacher. And so, of course, we are now 86 John Anderson days away until the start of the Michigan football season. And, Sam, there's one other guy that we talk about here on the show because, you know, he's a guy, a pretty big name guy, if you will, in Michigan lore. And so we want to give a chance to shout out a guy who is the guy that I think most people are thinking I'm going to mention right now here on the countdown. And so we're going to do this the proper way. We're going to mention him the proper way here on the countdown because we are also 86 Super Mario Manningham days away until the start of the Michigan football season.
Penny dropping to throw, looking right, fires toward the end zone. Touchdown! Mario Manningham caught it on the post, and Michigan will win! 27-25 on the last play of the game.
Penny straight back to throw. He's going to go deep. He's got a man open in Notre Dame territory. Hits Manningham in stride at the 25, the 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Michigan. And the Wolverine strike 70 yards. Kenny to throw against the blitz. Lobs it right corner end zone. Manningham. Touchdown, Michigan. Super Mario strikes again. And it's 26-7.
Can you name all three of those catches, Sam?
Yeah, the first one was Penn State, which I remember being on the field for in disbelief. Second one was Notre Dame out and up bomb that, you know, I believe there was a really good blitz pickup that Chad stepped up and hit him deep. I need to hear the third one again.
You need to hear the third one again? All right, let me play this one for you again here and see what number this is going to be.
First one was 04, second one was 06.
The 05.
Same. 05, second one was 06.
Penny to throw against the blitz. Lobs it right corner end zone. Manningham. Touchdown, Michigan. Super Mario strikes again. And it's 26-7.
Wait, it was what to 7?
Oh, it was the, 26-7? It was, Sam,
that wasn't Michigan State.
No, it was Notre Dame again.
Okay.
It was the second touchdown in the same Notre Dame game.
He had a big grab up at Michigan State, too.
I don't have that in the system.
Okay.
Basically.
Oh, hey, man, you know what? I remember he is a Warren Harding guy. He was a big recruit when he landed. But I remember when he came in with Antonio Bass. And Tonio is taking up all the oxygen in the room. I mean, both big-time recruits, and I think that Mario Manning clearly talented enough.
So where was Adrian Arrington in that conversation?
So was Adrian Arrington in that?
Was he in the same class or the next class?
I'm trying to remember if he was in that particular class. I can't remember if he was in that particular class, but I do remember vividly that as freshmen, Mario and Antonio were in the same class. And
Adrian was the year before, I stand corrected.
Okay. Yeah, Antonio was taking up a lot of the oxygen. I mean, there was just so much buzz about what he was doing. And I remember thinking when he got hurt, like, oh man, you know, the dynamic threat. And he was, I mean, you did lose a lot of potential there, but I say that to say that, man, Mario stepped up and all of that big play potential, or a lot of that big play potential that you thought might be gone, he picked up a lot of that slack and became a huge, huge downfield threat for Michigan. And, you know, the one that I'm always going to remember was the one that was thrown over his freaking head in 2006. The same play. It was the same play that they ran against Notre Dame. And it was just as open. It was just as open, Ira. Down in Columbus. Mario Manningham running down the sideline wide open. Oh, it's over his head, Ira. Oh, it was so bad. Oh. But yeah, Mario could put it down, man. That was at a run. Harding was like, at that time, think about it. You had Mo Claret. You had Prescott Burgess. You had Mario Manningham all in succession down there. It was just a loaded time for that school. And Michigan got two of them. How about that, Mr. Weintraub? Michigan got two of them at that time. So hopefully those days are coming back. Mario, of course, went on to have a really nice pro career as well. Number 86, Mario Manningham.
So we are 86, Bulla Bob Westfall, 86, John Anderson, 86, Super Mario Manningham days away until the start of the Michigan football season. And saying there's one current member of the roster that wears the number 86. He has been, he's been here at Michigan now 3 years. He did play in one game as a freshman in 2018. He played in 11 games as a sophomore in 2019. He played in all six games as a junior in 2020. Although I think Sammy still has like 4 years of eligibility remaining based on all this scheduling. It's just kind of odd. But that is 6'5", 252-pound tight end at a Hamden, Connecticut, Hamden High School. He is a senior with like 3 or 4 years of eligibility remaining, it feels like. We are talking about Luke Schoonmaker.
You know, interesting guy. This was another one of those Northeast guys from that run of Michigan really, really hammering the Northeast. Interesting with him, though. I mean, his track is much like that of Zach Gentry. You remember Zach Gentry was a high school quarterback that could really run, transition to tight end at Michigan. Schoonmaker transitioned earlier in his career, transitioned in his high school career. Similar height, similar speed as Zach Zimmer, maybe even a step faster than Gentry was. And it's been a matter of putting on some weight. And so a guy, an inline guy that can, you know, that can be a seam buster, an inline guy that can run by a lot of linebackers. At least that was the book on him coming out of high school. So can box out a safety, can run by a linebacker. We'll see if that comes to fruition in this year. You know, needed to get bigger so he could survive more as a blocker. And you feel like that's all coming together now. Like he has years in the program. He has years in the strength and condition in S&C. So you feel like the size, the strength, the muscle mass, those things are in place for him to go out and be a factor in both phases of the game, both as a receiving threat, which we saw. I want to say we saw him, wasn't it against Illinois? I think against Illinois, he caught a touchdown pass last year on an RPO. I think. But anyway. No. A couple years ago, because they didn't play Illinois last year. So that'd be a couple of years ago. I think he caught a touchdown pass on an RPO. Feel like it's all ready to come together for Schoonmaker, and they have a tight end contingent that should be more of a factor this year than they were last year. We can knock on wood, right? Number 86, Mr. Schoonmaker.
We are 86, Luke Schoonmaker, 86, Super Mario Manningham, 86, John Anderson, 86, Bullet Bob Westfall, days away until September 4th when the Michigan Wolverines open the 2021 football season against Western Michigan at the Big House. The countdown of the Michigan football season on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket is brought to you by friends at Lewis Jewelers, your diamond store, your watch store, proud partner of Michigan Athletics and Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket.
Yeah, so a lot to talk about today as we – we'll get back to it. You have the press conference that's scheduled for today where Bo Schembechler's son will come out and lend voice to the accusations levied in print yesterday and most of the local publications, ESPN, covering it as well. And, you know, for me, I guess for me, you can't do more to convince me that the allegations at the time weren't taken seriously. I already believe that. So this doesn't make that belief any firmer than it already was for me. I don't know. Maybe it does for other people. I see this as more a part of the process. You know, I know you talked to lawyers about this, and Mark Dotson was one of them that I heard talk about this. He said, okay, now you're going to see the next phase of this case. And talk more broadly, not specifically as it relates to the press conference today, but he said more broadly, you're going to see more, more public allegations. More convening of press conferences where allegations are levied. So I don't expect this to be the last press conference like this. I think there will be several more, and it's all a part of the, as you see the billboards and the commercials. And this is all to me, trying to move the meter when it comes to the process with the university, the settlement process with the university. I think that is, from a lawyerly sense, and listening to them talk about it, what we see now, what we're going to see, are all part and parcel to that. Because I feel like the people, at least this is my impression, and I'm curious what you think, Ira. I think people's opinions are pretty entrenched. You either believe that there was some knowledge of what was going on and ignoring it or not taking it seriously. I think it's the latter. You know, I think allegations were made, and they were at least as it relates to Bo. And this is just my belief. I don't know. Bo wasn't there. Just the litany of allegations makes me believe that, yeah, he was told, and he was like, hey, this is part of, give me a break. You know, we all get physicals. This is not abuse. That's what I think he thought. So I think he didn't take it seriously, and I think that perpetuated abuse. My opinion, for what it's worth, that doesn't hold any value in a court of law. I'm not seeking converts. I'm not proselytizing, not trying to convince anyone else to believe what I believe, but that is indeed what I believe. Now, you know, to the extent that is a commonly held belief, to the extent that this helps that, I should say, be a commonly held belief, I don't know that it does. I think just people's belief. For instance, there's a lot of reaction to Jim last week saying, hey, the Bo I knew didn't sweep things under the rug. That didn't do anything to change my opinion of the time. Just like Matt Schembechler's allegations today don't make that belief any firmer or stronger in me. Neither kind of move the meter from where I am. And I just kind of believe that's where people are. I think people have formed their opinions. Either you believe that nothing happened, or even you believe that there was no either ignoring or minimizing the allegations, or you believe that there was, and it's time for some sort of restitution as a result. And everything that we see in the interim between now and then is about how you get to some closer to some semblance of fairness, understanding that you can't make people that were victimized whole. It's impossible. You can only come up with some semblance of that. And then, as importantly, start to put some systems in place to ensure and assure that you don't allow for abuse like this to be go unchecked, go unpunished, go without monitoring clearly. So that's where I am with it. It'll be interesting to see if other people are moved by it, or moved off a position. If you were of the belief that no abuse happened, does this make you believe it now? Or if you believed that there was something, did it change your opinion based on the bow that Jim knew? None of this does any of that for me. Just like I said, the number of allegations, the report that was commissioned by Michigan that said the report says it was reported to. I don't know how you dispute that. I don't know how you draw another conclusion. And so then the question becomes, okay, well, what do you think happened after he was told? Do you think he simply tried to cover it up? Like he knew this is illegal and he tried to cover it up? Or did he hear it and he was like, oh, this is part of playing football. You get a physical. Both are wrong. Both deserve scrutiny. Both deserve criticism. Both, I think, put the kind of culpability and not just his feet. I mean, I can't just make it a bow thing. This was a university thing that puts the kind of culpability at the feet of the university that requires a response morally, a moral response. As we talked about the legal aspect of this, I think that too is a part of why you see a public sort of trying of the case, because you listen to lawyers talk about it. There will need to be some, in order for the statute of limitations to not apply, there would need to be some legal wrangling to make that so. So really what you're appealing to is the moral compass of the university to be compelled by, living up to that standard to come up with some semblance of restitution, some semblance of it. And they're in the process of mediation right now, it sounds like. I mean, how this affects that process? I mean, does it enhance the case? Because if you're Michigan, I mean, they're like, I think with 800 victims, or 800 alleged victims, right? So you could conceivably be seeing press conferences all the time. Does the looming specter of that move the meter? Does it make the process move quicker? When I say move the meter, does it expedite things? Would be the question, because it seems to me that through their actions, that there is mediation, that there is an attempt to, come to some settlements here, that there is an admission, of culpability on the university's part, even if those, even if the principal parties are no longer with us, the institution is. The harm is, and so there is a moral responsibility to do as much as you can to make that right. And understanding that, again, it's impossible to make it right. So, yeah, we go through. I don't think this is the last press conference day is kind of my point as far as that's concerned. But I am curious as what it says to you. Does it change your opinion in any way? That's kind of how I mean, it's unfortunate that, you know, clearly what was a troubled familial situation was going on. And on some level, and now it's come public. It just so happens in this particular instance that the thing that's coming public was also a thing that affected hundreds of other people. So it's relevant. It's relevant for what happened behind closed door. What allegedly happened behind? Because let me refer to it properly. What allegedly happened behind closed doors in that family setting? It is appropriate for it to be aired in this instance because it is in keeping with the allegations that others are making. So it is relevant. I know there's a lot of talk about the frayed relationship between Matt Schembechler and Bo Schembechler, references to the, you know, the fact that he sued Bo and he sued the university in the past. I am not dismissing that as relevant. I'm not dismissing the relevance of that. It is, I think, necessary to mention that, to give context, some context, potentially, to the relationship. At the same time, that does not mean that, you know, he wasn't abused. That doesn't mean that, especially when there are countless other similar allegations. So I am not dismissing that at all. I want to make that clear too, because as soon as you talk about it, you get the, yeah, but what about? I get it. And it's relevant. But so too is an allegation that is consistent with other allegations. And just like I said, I already believed that he was told that my belief that this is what you do. You get a physical and a rectal exam is part of a physical. That just happens. One of the quotes says, toughen up. I believe that happened. Can I prove it happened? I can't prove it happened. But I believe that happened. So now what do you do about that is the question. 734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@wtk.com. Curious if this moves you in any way. Does this move you off a position that you already had? Is the better question. 734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio@wtk.com. We got to get to a break. Be back on the other side here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket.
Hey, DQ fans, the girls.